Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. To Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am Randy Fine, your talk radio show host. Today is something I think we can all, the show topic is something I think we can all relate to. We're going to be talking about how to deal with difficult people, which I know we all encounter in our lives, and some of us may even be that difficult person. My guest today, Sarah Elliston, was one such difficult person who now helps others deal with others who are difficult people. She is an expert in the art of dealing with difficult people, a top workshop leader, and a member of the faculty of William Glasser Institute, which espouses reality therapy to foster behavioral change. But her instructional career began long before she even became aware that she was herself a difficult person, traits that began in Lincoln, MA, where she grew up. For more than 30 years, she has been teaching and training, first as a high school teacher in Ohio and Cincinnati, and then as an administrator in the not-for-profit sector. So let's bring Sarah on so we can hear her story and hear her suggestions on how we can deal with others. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
You are very welcome. Thank you for being my guest today. Okay, so how would you describe yourself as a former difficult person?
Somebody who tries to be very aware of the impression she's making, or at least not so much the impression, but the impact that she's having on others. So I'm always looking to make sure that something I said without thinking isn't annoying someone else or isn't too abrupt. I think that's one of the characteristics.
And what were you like before you became aware of those things?
Well, I was pretty abrupt, I think. More abrupt than normal. It's hard to describe. I was going through life with both fists up, if you will, kind of like fighting off the world. But I didn't realize that. So when I was standing up for something I believed in, there was a whole element of rage coming through that I wasn't aware of, and I didn't even know it was there. And now I see it in other people, and I go, aha, that's what I was like. So I was was pretty good at every at my job. I was a good teacher. I'm a good explainer. And yet, when I got into interactions with, say, colleagues, the people that I worked with and made decisions with, I came across as being argumentative, challenging people's authority, which was not intended, but it was, I'm sure, I know they experienced it that way. I had one manager who shook his finger at me in a staff meeting. He was so angry, and it was my tone and my unwillingness to let go of whatever it was I was arguing for. And I was going, yeah, but what about this, and yeah, but what about that, and you know, I didn't I didn't have to do that, but I did it because it was important, right?
Right. Anyway,
so I think I was pretty annoying, and I think argumentative is a good description. Most difficult people, at least the way, you know, people always ask me, well, how do you define a difficult person? And I think we all have difficult people in our lives. I mean, we all know who they are. I think some of the things they share, some traits they share, is they complain a lot. They criticize. They blame other people. They don't usually take responsibility for their own behavior. Threatening. Just generally, not always just generally negative, but there's a tone of sarcasm is often used by difficult people. So, and I was all of those, but I mean, I must have been something else also because I was married and I had a child and I had friends. So I wasn't horrible. I think for the people I worked with, it was easier for them to put me in positions where I was working by myself or, you know, teaching classes to other people than working on teams within the organization. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. So one aspect was that you were a right fighter. You just were going to fight till the death to be right on any given situation. Where did all that come
from? True. Well, in my book, I talk about the fact that I am a middle child who was very different from my two siblings. I was always energetic and always looking for what's next, and I think my mom was really happy with one baby, and then the second one came along, and her husband was fighting in a war, and I was a very different kid, a kind of a, you know, personality, and I think it was very difficult for her, and so there was always a tension between my older sister and myself, and I always felt that no matter what I did, that she was winning. And she, of course, was very skillful at making sure that if something went wrong, it was always my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's kind of the genesis of it. And we are not in that place today. I mean, I look at it now. I had a younger sister who kind of went along with, I mean, she could see the way the power was going, so she hung out with my older sister, and my perception of my childhood was that they played together and they excluded me. And I know I was included plenty of times, but I always ended up feeling like I was getting tricked or the joke was played on me if all three of us were together. I was always on guard. And my younger sister and I have talked quite a bit about this as adults, and their reaction was that my mom spent a lot of time trying to make sure Sarah was happy. And so their perception was that I got all the attention and they got none. Not none, but the focus
right.
was on Sarah. And I think you could say in a dysfunctional family system that I was the scapegoat in that way. So anyway, when I remember the feeling of talking about something that I cared strongly about, both in college and then throughout my life. And, man, when that feeling comes up in me now, I go, whoa, wait a minute. Who are you fighting here? You know, what are you doing? Because I recognize it now, and I just remember feeling it and thinking, why doesn't anybody else feel this way? Why aren't they all agreeing with me? What's wrong? Because that was the other part of my growing upness was I figured everything I did was always right. I didn't quite have it right. There must be something really wrong with me.
So,
and I don't know. I think a lot of people share that belief.
Yeah.
Not necessarily
so
difficult
one of the
people.
Things about being a difficult person is not having the ability to listen to what others are saying, to be so caught up in, you know, what you're trying to get across that you really don't hear others. Isn't that true?
Well, you can hear them, but you don't take it in. In other words, I think I was a pretty good listener if someone was telling me their problems. But when they were telling me something about me, I heard negative criticism. And so I put up some kind of a barrier. It hurt. I always cried. But if they were trying to explain to me something I was doing, if it was a correction, you know, don't throw the ball that way, throw it this way, that's different. But I think I couldn't hear what they were trying to say. And so part of it for me was maybe that I couldn't really listen in a neutral place. I couldn't listen without taking it personally.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't say it without making it personal.
Right.
That.
Right.
And that's
got it.
Really the whole genesis of the book. And the reason I started teaching the workshops on dealing with difficult people was to try to come up with an appropriate format for people to use in having a conversation with someone like me and acknowledging, knowing ahead of time, this person's probably going to take it personally, and you can hang in there with that. You know, you can sit through it and remind them that it's not personal. I remember once when I was teaching, I was a substitute teacher, and I shared an office with a more experienced teacher who'd been in the school system longer, and one class of kids just really didn't like me. They didn't like having a substitute, period, so, and then they didn't like me, too. And they came in and they kind of trashed my side of the office, and I was just crushed. And and my colleague kept saying, don't take it personally. And my reaction was, how else am I supposed to take it? It was a personal thing. And he's saying, yeah, but it's any leader, any teacher, anybody in your situation would make them mad, and they would do that to any of them. And I said, well, they don't do it to you. He said, I've been here for 10 years, you know. And I couldn't hear him. I couldn't understand the concept of don't take it personally, when certainly what they did was aimed at being personal.
Right.
So there's a maturity in there that I didn't have.
Okay. And what was the turning point for you?
Oh, well,
was there one thing, one pivotal moment?
Well, there was a pivotal moment when I suddenly thought, oh, my God. And that was when I was 50 years old, and I had a new supervisor in my job, and I really liked her. She was a trainer. She was not from Cincinnati. She was very direct, and she really liked the way I designed trainings and the way I presented them. She had a lot of positive things to say to me. And in one moment, at one point when we were just talking about a bunch of different stuff, she said, you know, by the way, you have this really bad habit. It's very annoying to the rest of us, and you get upset, and you start to really create a lot of havoc. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, never mind, I'll tell you when it happens. Next time it happens, I'll point it out. And a couple of weeks later, I was having a little mini frantic moment in my office, my little cubicle. We were in a small room with like four cubicles, and then her office had a door, and it was off of this. But it was a relatively small space, and I was opening drawers and slamming those little flippers they have in the cubicle offices and looking for these glasses that I had just paid a hefty amount of money for, and I couldn't find them. And I was really frustrated, and I think I was stomping around and probably swearing and just doing things that are unpleasant and annoying if you're trying to do your work. And she leaned out her door. She said, hey, Sam, come on in here. And I went in and sat down, and she said, that, what you're doing right now, that needs to stop. And I said, what am I doing? I honestly had no awareness of what I was doing. And she described it, and I said, well, oh, golly. She said, you know, it's very difficult for your colleagues to get their work done when you're doing that. You're creating all kinds of negative energy and negative vibrations and using words that I wasn't real familiar with, but I got it. And I heard her. I thought, oh, my God, she's right. Because I could immediately see that I was picking things up and dropping them and stomping around. Part of it for me was that I didn't have a clue that anybody even noticed me or noticed what I was doing.
Okay.
I think part of being difficult, or for me, I notice, and I've tested it out on others who acknowledge that they might be difficult, is that we're not aware of how people perceive us. I speak with authority, I have confidence, or people think I do. It looks like I have confidence. I have an education, I'm fairly knowledgeable, and people perceive me as being strong, confident, independent woman, right? I don't perceive me, or I didn't perceive me that way when they did. And so, I remember the first time I asked a classroom full of students, you know, to open their books to a certain page, and they did. I had a physical reaction to it, like, oh, my God, they did what I asked them to do. And I don't know if every teacher has that kind of experience. I didn't have a lot of babysitting experience, so I didn't have a lot of experience with kids, and I didn't know they were going to do what I asked them to do. So it was that was an important moment. But getting back to the experience of acknowledging, like, oh, my God, she's right. I wasn't aware that my colleagues even noticed me. You know, I mean, that when they came in and said hello, or I stopped and said hello to them, that's one thing. But when I was sort of caught up in my own little vortex, if you will, of frustration, I didn't understand that it had an impact on anybody else. And I went in, I remember sitting down at my desk and looking around and thinking, you know what? And I went and apologized to each one of them and said I was sorry. And they said, oh, no big deal. But, you know, it was a pretty big deal. And I realized, I talked to my husband and my son and some of my friends and colleagues, and they said, yeah, you can get in a twit. And it passes pretty quickly, but it's pretty violent. Well, you know, not violent, but it's pretty powerful while you're there. I think I was easily annoyed and very critical of others. I think because I was very critical of myself. So at that moment, that was the sort of moment that I point to and say, ah, look at that. Now, I was never there are people that worked with me after that moment who said, well, you know, who could say you were difficult afterwards? Also, it took a while for me to really recognize that it wasn't just getting trapped in your frustration. It was the whole tone of how I looked at other people I began to realize that I was in competition all the time. I remember saying to someone when they were planning an event, and they said, oh, you'd be good for this. You're competitive. And I said, oh, no, I hate competition. I don't like competition at all. She said, you are the most competitive person I know. And that was information also, a sort of, I don't feel competitive. I hate playing competitive games. I've always loved to play tennis, but I hated to have to play a game and keep score. And I thought, this has got to have origin somewhere else, you know. So I did a lot of different therapies and a lot of soul searching to get to where I am now.
That's awesome. So I have, I'm the owner of Massage Envy. I have two locations in South Florida. And I have one particular employee who annoys every single person in there. Some people cannot deal with this person. This person, if she gets a hold of you, she will talk and talk and talk and follow you everywhere. And even if you say, I'm busy, she'll say, just a minute, can I just have a minute? And then she'll peek in the door and push it open. And how do you deal with somebody who absolutely has no idea how annoying they truly are and is making everybody their enemy? And when they feel like they're rejected, get very upset at the other person. How do you deal with this?
Yeah. Well, you want to get really specific and concrete about what she's doing. And you're pretty much there that she talks even after you explain that you don't have time to talk. And that's pretty clear. That's a very specific behavior. She also takes people telling her they don't have time to talk personally, right?
Right.
So those are two. And what does she do then? Does she go off and cry or yell at them? Or
it depends on who the person is. It depends on who the person is. But then she's paranoid and she thinks the people are against her. It's kind of a mess.
I can understand it completely. But the first,
it's largely a boundary issue.
You can label it and see it in a global way. What I invite you to do is to look at just the really concrete. How do you deal with it? You have a conversation with her. But to start with, you have
Sarah?
To be really concrete. Hello, are you there? Hello? 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 Are you there? Hello? Hello? Randy?
Sarah, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
All right. Your call dropped, and then it dropped me, so I don't know what happened. Okay. Anyway, we're back.
Oh, okay. Good.
Sorry about that.
I was like, oh, my goodness, I don't know what happened.
I don't know
what
happened either.
What I was starting to say, well, here we are. We're back.
Okay.
All I wanted to say was, what I'm inviting you to do is to be a little more concrete than global. You know, you can see all the big picture about who she is and what she is, and that helps us at least get a picture of her. But in order to have a conversation with her, you need to really be behavioral, if you will, very concrete about what she says and what she does.
Okay.
So if we just take those two things, that she wants to talk all the time, wants to have a conversation all the time, and especially even when people tell her they don't have time. Okay? Is that true?
Yes, and even when people insinuate it.
Yeah, well,
that they don't have time.
So one thing on everybody's agenda, maybe before the conversation or even after the conversation, is say, Jane, I really don't have time right now to talk to you. Let's set a date or whatever. Let's look at our calendars and find a time when we can talk.
Okay.
If that's what you want to do. I used to have a boss who would come around my cubicle about 4:15, and we were all going home at 4:30, and he would start these incredible conversations and ask me these questions that were really exciting to try and answer, and I'd realize that I'd still be there talking to him at 5:00, and I wanted to leave at 4:30. And I had to start learning to pack up, you know, put everything in my briefcase, turn my lights off, close everything, and actually walk out to the elevator with him having the conversation. That was the only way. This was before I knew this particular process, too. But anyway, so the thing is, those are the two behaviors right now that we want to address with her. The next thing is, what's the impact on the team of her constantly wanting to talk and ignoring the hints and the messages that you don't have time and sulking and crying or being, you know, taking it personally when people say, I can't talk to you right now. How, you said it's driving everybody crazy, right?
Yes. People hide.
And it,
people, people actually hide.
Well, it also sounds like others are becoming, okay, so they hide. Are they also starting to label her? Right?
Yes.
She's this or she's that and not like her.
Right.
Okay. All right. So then the conversation in my book, I have a whole series of steps that you would go through to sort of self-examine to say how much of this is me and how much of this is her. And do I just want her to be different? And, you know, people can go through that. We won't do that just because of time. But if you'd like, you could be her and I'll be you. And we could have a conversation. Would that be okay?
Okay. Okay.
The first thing I was going to do is say, we're meeting at Starbucks or somewhere where it's public, but it's not at work. And it's just, I've just asked you to get together because I really don't have time for you right now because I'm at work, but let's meet this afternoon at 4:30 or, you know, an appropriate time. Okay?
Okay.
All right, and so what do we call her, Jane?
Yes, let's call her Jane.
Is that okay? I just want to make sure
that's
not
fine.
Her name.
That's not
okay.
Her name. Okay.
All right. Well, Jane, thank you so much for coming and sitting with me at Starbucks. It's so much more fun to be able to talk to you when we can really talk.
Yeah. You know, I really wanted to talk to you like earlier because I had something I really needed to tell you immediately, and nobody seemed to, you know, care about what I was saying. And so, and this person is doing this thing, and that person is doing that thing, and I, you know, I don't think it's right, and I just
really...
So
you really have some specific suggestions for the way we're doing our work. Have you put it in writing? Is there something I could read?
No, I haven't, because I don't really want these people to know I said anything.
Oh, well, then I guess it's not that important. If it's really important, you'd put it in writing. If you really value what you're suggesting, you'd put it in writing. That doesn't mean I will necessarily share it with them, but it's like writing a letter to the editor, really. If you really care about something, you put it down in writing. The other thing is, though, I am interested in hearing what you have to say, but you do seem to have an issue with trying to get my attention at work. When I tell you that I'm busy, you continue to want to talk to me. And it's like your information is more important than my work. And that doesn't really sit well with me. Do you know that you do that? Are you aware that you continue to talk or try to have conversations with me even when I tell you I can't? Do you know you do that?
Well, sort of, but, you know, everybody seems to ignore me, so I feel like I have to push harder.
Right. I get that. I can see why. I'm not ignoring you right now, and I'm telling you that when you continue to come after me and talk to me when I tell you I cannot talk right now because of work, it really has a negative impact for me. I do want to avoid you. And I don't really want to avoid you. I like you. I wouldn't have you on the payroll otherwise. It's just this particular trait makes me think, what do I do now? Because she's got another complaint for me and she's going to interrupt my work. And I don't think you want that, do you?
No, but is it okay if I call you after hours on your cell phone?
Let's talk about what's appropriate in terms of what's appropriate and inappropriate. Let's talk about what's appropriate about talking about work. Maybe you and I need to set a time when you can talk to me about how you're feeling about work and what you think other people are doing. Right now, I really just want to get clear that you are aware that you come after me and others. This has an impact on the whole team of us because you continue to want to talk about what somebody else is doing. You don't it feels like you don't respect our work. Is that true? Do you just think your information is more important than our work?
No, you know I'm not like that. You know I'm really a caring person, a very sensitive person. I really care about people, and that's why I do this. That's why I want to bring all these points up.
Okay, and so I'm inviting you to put the points in writing and you and I could meet, you know, tomorrow or the next day again after work and talk about them.
Okay.
But
all right.
What I'm also asking is if you would consider the fact that all of the things that you want to bring up and all the things that you're caring about, you keep wanting to talk to me about them or talk to other people about them, even when we have a job to do, and that doesn't feel caring to us. It feels like you don't respect our work.
Oh.
Is that your intention? I don't think so, is it?
No. No. No, that's not my intention. I just, you know.
So
no.
Do you realize if it has that impact, the consequences are, as you say, people seem to avoid you. And I don't think you want that either, do you?
No. No, I mean, it's just the people pick on me. But anyway, I get it now.
They may.
That's great. This is
But what I was going to say is you have to give a little there because, you know, you're going to have to talk to her about what she's complaining about all the other people about. And that's just plain no fun, you know.
Right.
And that's
exactly
helping her get over whatever it is she's getting over. But she doesn't need to subjugate all of you and all the staff. But if you're the boss and she's got all this information about what other people are doing that's wrong, then you probably are going to have to – I think asking for it in writing is absolutely correct.
Okay,
that's what
we're going to do. Right, I think that's a great way to deal with this. Yeah.
If you have any questions about it, there's a guy in Sanibel named Dr. Sid Simon, who was one of the values clarification founders, who always made his college students had to have a letter to the editor published in order to pass his class, University of Massachusetts. And I've written a number of letters to the editor. His name never been published.
Well,
anyway.
Wow. So Sarah, you wrote the book Lessons from a Difficult Person: How to Deal with People
mm-hmm.
Like Us.
Mm-hmm.
And your point in writing the book was what drove you to write this?
Well, the ultimate driving was I was teaching workshops about it, and people were asking for more. So I thought if I write it down, they'll have it. And they can go back to it because they had their handouts and their experience of a workshop, but it was, you know, people were wanting more and they wanted like the advanced, whatever the advanced would be. And so that was the final kick that got me to sit down and write it. But the purpose of the workshops and the book is to help people like you with somebody like your employee. And not stay in the place of she's driving everybody crazy, she's this or she's that, or, you know, whatever labels that we put on people. I'm hoping that what I just demonstrated was that you really can have a conversation and let that person have all their excuses and their defenses and continue with them until they get it. that they're going to have to change. One of the real specific elements is we all want to be accepted and be a part of. So when it's a team thing or the customers are alienated, we didn't bring that in, and maybe that's true too, the difficult person doesn't want to do that, and they don't know they're doing it. She didn't see her passion as disrespectful of your work. I thought that was new information for her.
Mm. Okay.
So
got it.
That kind of conversation is a little easier than saying, well, she's a this or she's a that, so I really wrote it for her, for the person that's driving you crazy, because I was her.
Okay.
And
well,
I can tell you what, she feels avoided and she feels unloved and she feels picked on and she doesn't have any friends and woe is me. Now, your having that conversation with her may not change her life a whole lot, but maybe she'll stop complaining to you anyway. And maybe she'll say, gosh, I complain a lot. Maybe I should talk to someone about that. You don't have to say that to her.
And it would probably be me.
No. Oh, no, because you're her boss, right?
Well, I do counseling. I do counseling, so she'll say, well, can you help me with this?
No.
I know how to stop that one. I know how to stop that one.
You can refer her to somebody.
Yes, exactly.
I would encourage you to send her to – go ahead.
Yeah. In your book, you talk about the red pencil mentality. What is that?
Isn't that fun? That's another – actually, it's a concept from Sid Simon in the values clarification movement. He says we go through our lives looking at everything through the red pencil or the red pencil glasses because all of our – you know, all of our schooling – how many of us had a teacher that showed us something was wrong that wasn't using a red pencil? So he used to have an exercise in his workshops where he would stand in front of the room and put his hands up, you know, as if he was looking at glasses, and the people in the classroom would say, no matter what you say to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. And he'd say, take your elbows off the table. No matter what you say to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. Mm-hmm. And he would shout all these sort of negative criticisms that we've all heard all of our lives. And don't chew with your mouth full and, you know, whatever. Now they're saying don't use cursive, whatever the teachers are saying now. And so we would be combating the red pencil mentality, if you will. And it's
okay.
All about the fact that we're taught to look at the world to find what's wrong with it. We're not taught to look at the world and find what's right.
That is true.
The feedback we're given in schools is here's what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a school teacher when I first bumped into this concept, and so I totally threw my students for a loop on the next test. I put all the points that they earned in red pencil at the edge of the paper. And so I usually say, this was great, but you missed this and this, so it's -5. I'd say, this was great, you missed this, it's a +15.
I love that, Sarah.
Say it was a 20-point. They went bananas. They were just, they got so upset because it would say +85. And they said, you're taking 85 points. I said, look again. It's a plus, not a minus. You know, and we laughed about it because, I mean, they were seventh graders and they'd been programmed that if it's in red ink, it's wrong. So I was doing my little attempt to change that.
I think that's a great idea. And when I do my reviews, I think I will do that. I like that idea. I like that idea very much.
The reason it's in the book is because we tend to go by looking for what's wrong, and that isn't always useful. And so part of the self-examination as you're preparing to have a conversation with someone is to say, how much of this is me just being critical? Am I just looking at this person with red pencil glasses? And let me say, aside, I don't think you are. I think you've really struggled with what to do with this woman. And it just sounds so typical. It's like people are avoiding her and not wanting to have anything to do with her. So blessings to you for being willing to look for a solution.
I'm the one understanding person, but I've pretty much had it. So,
Sarah,
as we come down to the end of the show,
mm-hmm.
How can people contact you, first of all?
Well, I have a website, sarahelliston.com, and it's Sarah has an H, so it's Sarah Elliston, as it's spelled, .com. And you can send me an email from there. You can buy the book from there. If you sign up and put your email on, you know, they always have a little thing that pops up and says, give us your email for future mailings. You'll get a couple of pages of the workshop, some of the handouts for free, as well as the first chapter of the book for free. So that's a start. And then I do individual coaching with folks. It's similar to what you and I just did, you know, talking about their issues. It's not counseling, and when I have determined that someone probably has some issues, then I recommend they see a counselor. But I do some coaching with supervisors, managers, family members, whoever they are, who have difficult people. And I love to present the workshops, so I'm always open to having people bring me in to an organization to do some training around what I just talked about.
Okay, and do you just do that in the Ohio area?
Oh, no, I'll travel, but, I mean, then I have to be, I mean, someone else has to pay for the travel. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I just love
and
to
your
do
book,
it. I love to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Your book,
yeah.
Is it also available on Amazon and those kind of outlets?
It's, yeah, if you go to my website, it'll take you right to Amazon. So if you go to Amazon, just type in Lessons from a Difficult Person. People often go to Amazon and type in difficult people, and it takes a couple of pages for my book to show up.
Okay.
So I think if you go to my website, that'll get you to Amazon, and you can get an e-book as opposed to a paperback book.
Awesome, awesome. Well,
yeah.
It's been great having you today, and I'm sorry we had that little glitch, but we managed to fit a lot in regardless, and I'm really glad to have met you. I think that what
you
have to offer people is so important and so valuable, so thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. Drop me an email or something and let me know how it goes with Jane if you have a conversation with her.
Yes, I will.
Don't fire her yet.
No. I will not do that. So, but thank you so much for your points. Yeah.
You're welcome. I loved being here. That was fun.
Yeah, good. I had fun too. Well, I wish you a wonderful day, and you'll hear from me, I'm sure. So, thanks again for being
my
guest.
Mm-hmm.
So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can leave me comments at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. loveyourlife@randigfine.com. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is your talk radio show host, author, life issues counselor, Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.